This is Steve Robbins. Welcome to Business Explained. Today, we'll be talking about how you can change other people with Peter Bregman and Howie Jacobson. Hi, and welcome to our live stream this week. You know, one of my greatest joys in life is other people, and one of my greatest frustrations in life is also other people. If only they would learn to mold themselves to my will quickly and easily, my life would be so much better. Unfortunately, conventional wisdom goes, you can't change other people. And I am here today with Peter Bregman and Howie Jacobson, who just published a book, You Can Change Other People. So we're here to learn about how you can change other people. Gentlemen, tell me, if my number one joy in life is other people and my number one frustration is that they will not change to suit my needs, and if conventional wisdom says you can't change people to suit your needs, tell me a little bit about what is the book, and in fact, I mean, we can just jump right into content. How do I change other people? Because boy, would I like to do that.
Sure. So I think maybe it'd be useful to make a distinction between changing other people and molding them to your will.
Right. Rats.
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but you know, the title is provocative. But what we mean by it is really helping people becoming the best versions of themselves, overcoming obstacles, ending self-sabotage. So I don't know how to bend people to my will. I do know how to support them in ways that either they already want to change or they recognize that changing is going to give them outcomes that they desire. So I think that's a kind of a useful distinction and a framing for the process that we're talking about. Peter, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I think that what we're really going after is something that's already a tall order, which is helping people make changes that they want to make. That ultimately, you know, as coaches, we face that all the time. And in reality, if we approach it correctly, then what you discover is a lot of people want to make changes, even if they seem, in your mind, to be resistant to the idea or struggling to make the change happen. So it's really about how to open a conversation that helps people make changes that will make them better, stronger, more effective in ways that make them happy and that improve your relationship with them. And then it's following through on that opening to actually help them follow through on the changes.
Now, are you referring, both of you are business people, and are you referring here to helping people make changes in a work context or in a personal context, or is there any difference? Is there any difference between the two?
There are differences, and we're talking about both. You know, a lot of times, and you may have an experience of this, Steve, where, you know, you're an accomplished coach yourself. And I know for myself, I can be much more effective with my clients sometimes than I am with people in my personal life. And it's because I use certain skills with my clients that I don't necessarily use with my children, you know, or my mother, or, you know, like, so I think it's, the answer is the methodology is the same. The application should be intentional. And we tend to be more thoughtful about this with in our work lives, though I think what Howie and I have both seen is that everybody could use a dose of support in being effective at bringing skill in all elements of their lives.
Yeah, I think that the functional differences between personal and business come down to maybe what, you know, the stakes for me. So the stakes in my family life could be much higher. The history I have with people. So if I'm trying to change someone who's known me since I was in diapers, or who's known me as someone who tried to change them in ineffective ways, there's a whole history. And also the power dynamics. So I think, you know, we can mix and match, but understanding what each of us is bringing to the conversation in general is going to help us be most effective.
Well, let's jump into an example here. You said that this is really about how to help people change who already want to change or who want to get some results in their life. let's choose someone or an example from your history and tell us how you approach them, how they approach you. How did you know to kick off whatever the process is that you use in facilitating? Because I know that some people, if you try to kick off a process of facilitating them to change, they'll say, you know, I'm just venting. Don't do that stupid coaching stuff on me right now. So it seems like the first question is, how do you know when to start? And then what do you do?
How do you want to take this?
Okay. Well, so, you know, it depends how they approach you. So we have kind of, you know, like sort of four different scenarios where somebody could come and say, hey, I want you to help me change. At that point, okay, great, let's roll up our sleeves. Or someone comes and says, hey, I want you to give me advice, which we can also then parlay into a change conversation rather than just us telling them what to do. They also might say, you know, hey, can you do this for me? In which case, if we want to build their independent capability, we can say, hey, sure, I'd be happy to think it through with you. But they also may just, as you said, like vent or complain. And sometimes complaining is fine, right? We don't need to solve everyone's every complaint. If someone is in the habit of complaining, and it's part of their character, you know, complaining is really about not taking ownership, about not having agency, about being passive and powerless in a situation that you don't like. So if that's something that the person could benefit from shifting, we then have a three-part permission formula, which starts with empathy. And empathy, I find, like, when people do it on me, I like it so much. When people just empathize with something that I'm complaining about, I feel so heard, validated, warm, and fuzzy that it immediately opens me up to whatever they have to offer. So, like, starting with empathy, then expressing confidence in the person that you know that they've been able to handle situations like this, or they have some capacity or capability, and then saying something instead of like, hey, let's figure this out, a simple invitation, would it be helpful to think this through together? So, you know, that's a means of approach when you're not sure if someone's venting is actually an opening, what we call a silver platter opportunity to actually help them.
So the permission formula, it sounds like that's the thing that you do at the beginning to enter into the conversation.
Right.
Okay. So I'm trying to decide whether you want to go deep or sequential here. But I want to go deep for a second, because I am one of those analytical personality types that I hear people say, empathize, empathize, empathize. And my brain says, I'm reasonably sure I know how to empathize, but I'm not exactly sure what the behavior is, because I'm always trying to overanalyze everything. And at least to me, the concept of empathy is really deeply rooted in some kind of emotional connection. And I am so freaking unaware of my own emotions that I usually have to have them pointed out to me by external people. Which I'm actually not kidding when I say that. It's sort of hilarious and yet tragic and despair-filling at the same time. But since I don't connect with my emotions, I don't even notice the despair. So if I am someone who wants to be empathetic with someone else, what does that mean and how do I do it? Because, boy, is it a word that I've heard a lot, and boy, am I at a loss to do it deliberately.
So, you know, there's a... let's start with a definition of what empathy is, right? Empathy is understanding your story, opinions, perspectives, feelings to your satisfaction, right? So if I am empathizing with you, Stever, my job in empathizing is to help you feel seen and heard and understood and connected with. So it doesn't mean I have to feel the same emotions that you're feeling. It doesn't mean that I have to egg you on in them. It just means that I have to be a witness to them. And in fact, what I would suggest to you is, if you need other people to do that for you, you can watch what they do and how they do it, in a sense, and learn from that. Like, that becomes an example, a model for you. But it's not about to empathize with someone doesn't require you to feel what they're feeling. So in our case, in the way that we're thinking and talking about it, to you know, empathize with someone is, first of all, to listen. And actually, I'll give you some specific things to do. Listen, and actually listen to what they're saying. Repeat back what you're hearing so that you're sure that you understand it and they can correct you and it reflects back. and ask open-ended questions. If you do those three things, generally, they'll feel empathized with, and you'll have the benefit of actually understanding what's going on for them. Here's some things not to do. Say,
I can do that.
So here's some things not to do. I hear what you're saying, but here's what you're missing, right? But here's the thing. So using but to connect two parts of the sentence usually communicates to the person that everything you've said before but is a lie. It's like, you know, I totally appreciate what you're saying, but here's the thing, right? So now you've just negated any empathy that you've done. Telling them you hear or understand them without actually repeating back what they've said is also going to communicate to them that you haven't really heard. And then if you have a point you're trying to make, as opposed to just taking it in and conveying your listening, that's going to also dilute their experience of your empathy. So I hope that helps, both on the positive side, on the what to do side, and on the what not to do side.
Sure. Okay, so we've demonstrated empathy, and it sounds like confidence in them. Howie, what you modeled was just literally, you know, something along the lines of, I know that you've done this before. Would it be helpful to think things through? They say yes, it would. Where do you go from here? Because the agenda, presumably, the whole reason you're having the conversation is you haven't made whatever change it is that they want to make, and you want to help them do it. You've achieved permission, but presumably they're stuck, because otherwise you wouldn't be having this conversation. They'd be making the change themselves. So what's next?
So, you know, where they're stuck is in their problem, right? So they're stuck in their problem. And what we want to do, they still have that problem or whatever challenge they're facing, but you want to redirect them towards something that's positive and productive and energizing. And you do it with one simple question. And that is, what is the outcome that you want? What is the outcome where you want? You want it to be clear. You want it to be meaningful. You want to really understand and have them understand not what they want to avoid or move away from, but what they want to move towards. And once they're able to explain and articulate the outcome, then you're off and running, because that's your target. Your target is not to fix a problem. It's to achieve an outcome, of which a problem might be an obstacle, but the problem is not the point. It's the outcome that's the point.
So once they have the outcome, do they just take this and run with it, or is there more? Because that sounds like, I mean, it sounds like there's kind of two steps here, right? One is, here I am, I'm stuck, and we've gotten to the point where you've given me permission to change. And maybe what I'm spending all my time is, I'm kind of, you know, looking to the past, going, you know, oh, this stuff is wrong, this is bad, whatever, whatever. And you've now reoriented me on the future. You said, what is the outcome that you're striving for, that you're trying to get? But just because I'm now looking towards the future instead of looking towards the past doesn't mean I have any clue how to actually get there or what other obstacles might be there. So What do I do next? What do you do next to help me? I just switched positions, by the way. All of a sudden now we're talking about me as the person who wants to change instead of the hypothetical third person, because that's just easier.
That's all right. We're tracking. So sometimes just helping them shift their focus to the outcome they want actually opens up a lot of creative possibilities right away. And I've seen this so often. That as soon as people are focused on that, it's like, you know, just neurologically, what we're doing is trying to get people into a safe place where they can use the part of their brain that thinks long-term, that thinks strategically, that solves problems. So just having them focus on what they want can immediately have them thinking, oh, well, actually that problem is a problem. It's annoying, sure, but it's actually irrelevant to the outcome that I want. I can just forget about it and focus on something else. But very often it doesn't. Very often we've kind of opened up an access port to the part of the brain that looks for opportunity as opposed to trying to avoid threat. So now we go to the third step, which is to identify, to find, to discover a hidden opportunity in the existing situation. So now we go and we do very sort of coachy things around having them describe exactly what's going on to get them to tell it to us in detail form rather than general story form, because people get stuck in their stories. But when we start telling, like, this is what happened, Peter loves the question, you know, take me there, I'm a fly on the wall, what was going on in that meeting, what were people doing and saying, getting very specific, detailed, and granular, that often loosens people's grip on their interpretation and allows them to see possibilities, to see opportunities to get to the outcome, either in spite of the problem, but very often through the problem. So what they thought was a brick wall turns out to be a door.
Now, you just said it loosens the grip on their interpretation. There's something hiding there, because it sounds like interpretation is an important concept. Tell us a little bit more about that, because I think that's a distinction that people who are watching may or may not be familiar.
Yeah, well, we all have stories about, you know, what's going on, why we can't do things, like, oh, I just have a sweet tooth, or I'm excitable, I get, you know, I'm impulsive, I just blurt things out, right? So, or, you know, every time I'm in the meeting, Ramona does that thing and it drives me crazy. So whenever we're hearing sort of generalizations, when we're hearing, you know, things that sound like excuses, anytime we hear a thought that undermines the person's ability to make a different choice, to achieve a different outcome, we know there's some sort of interpretation. And we live by stories and interpretation. So we're not trying to say, let's, you know, wipe the slate clean and have beginner's mind about everything. But strategically, look at the interpretations that keep us stuck and powerless. And instead of us going in and saying, well, you're thinking about this all wrong, here's how I see it, we ask questions almost like Columbo-like, like the detective saying, hey, zoom in on this scene. What do you see? Tell me what's going on here, and allow the person to see that their interpretation may not fit, or that their interpretation isn't the only one. And we can ask questions about that in very gentle ways that allow people to move beyond. You know, interpretation is like another coachy word for that, is like a limiting belief, a limiting mindset, to free us up so that we can deal with reality as it is, or reality as we want it to be, that's most empowering.
Cool. Now, we've now oriented the person towards the outcome. We are getting them more. We're putting their attention now on the specifics of the situation. So instead of these broad generalization stories that keep us stuck, they're getting down to specifics. Is that it? Like, do they typically just get to the point where they're like, okay, now I know what specifics I need to change. Boom, I'm off to the races. Or is there more than that?
It's really critical, actually, that to move the conversation from a conversation to a commitment. Really. And that happens in the last step, which is about planning. So, and we call it create a level 10 plan. So you start with, you really start, you know, the first step, which, you know, the first step is to really get the permission, which what we really frame that is as, you know, we talked about it, but I don't know that we really talked in these terms of shifting from being a critic, which is how mostly we try to change people. And that's that, you know, somewhat humorously stated, you know, like, I want to bend people to my will. It like comes in as a critic to an ally, right? Which is, I want to help you make the kinds of changes you want to make. Then we focus on the outcome, then we find the opportunity. And at that point, it might be masterful and insightful and engaging and interesting, but it's still just a conversation. And what we need to do is translate the conversation into action. And the way you do that is by inciting movement, traction in one form or another. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't even have to be effective. It has to be a good bet that it might be effective, right? That's what we're going for in the plan. And the plan has all the things that a plan needs to have, which is, you know, what, when, where, how, who, like, what am I gonna do? How am I gonna do it? When am I gonna do it? The most critical piece is that you can follow through on it. So we call it a level 10 plan. And a level 10 means, on a scale of 1 to 10, what are the chances? What is your confidence level that you will follow through on this plan? Right? 10 being the highest, I have the most confidence that I'm going to follow through. And And that's creating that plan. And what's really important is that ownership stays in the hands of the person who's making the change. So the options that they think of, the commitment to the plan, the decision of what they're going to do, where, how, it can be facilitated by the person who's helping them change, but it really has to come from them, in a sense. That's going to make the biggest difference.
I'm sitting here revising my entire relationship, even as we speak. I'm thinking, I can sense some places in my personal life where this orientation is not, in fact, the orientation that I have shown. But I'm sure I'm the only person who's ever had that realization when it comes to changing other people in the
only
context
person.
Of our relationship.
Peter and I have done this perfectly our whole lives, we discovered.
Especially with family.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Well, and you even have kids, Peter. So it's good to know this works as a parent.
I mean, I think the most important thing, this is what I find, and this is what we find a lot of people find, which is I'm much more effective at doing this, you know, at work than I am with my family and with my children. And it is equally, it is even more powerful in some ways to do it with your family because they're used to the way you normally act with them, which is, you know, even in loving and caring ways, being somewhat, you know, it's not hard to end up being pretty directive with children. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work any better. I mean, maybe a 3-year-old it works with. It certainly doesn't work with a 15-year-old. And we still act the way with 15-year-olds the way often that we acted when they were 3, you know? And then we look at them and go, why are my children so oppositional? Well, you know, because we've created that opposition by painting them into a corner and forcing them to bend to our will, right? And then, you know, ultimately they're going to find whatever ways they can resist. And it's amazing when we turn around. It has been amazing for me and hard to do and hard to remember to do. And I'm thankful. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm personally thankful for the book that Howie and I have written because it takes writing the book and then reading it to remind myself that I should use this methodology with the people who are closest to me in my life.
So number one, I caught the subtext there with you gently telling me that my strategy of attempting to bend the world to my will is probably not going to work. Thank you for that bit of subtle coaching. And let me tell you, boy, can I relate to the writing a book thing. I'm in the middle of a book right now, and I put it away for a couple of weeks between drafts and then started rereading it. And as I was reading it, I was like, wow, this is fantastic advice. If only I followed it in my own business. I clearly know the right things to do. I just don't do them. And speaking of which, of knowing the right things to do and not doing them, you have a section of the book called Shifting from Critic to Ally, which is the piece that I just picked up on. Because as you were talking and I said this applies to me, I realized, wow, there's an area in my relationship where I've consistently been a critic. And it's the only approach I have ever taken to try to resolve a particular issue. And I've never asked for permission. I've never taken an outcome orientation, whatever. In other words, I've never been an ally. Can you talk a little bit about the shift from critic to ally and what it takes to do it with other people or with yourself? Or tell me about it.
For me, that's been the heart of how I have improved my relationships. Is so first of all, recognizing how strong the energy is in me that I know better. Right. And it's either, you know, I know better because I'm older, more experienced, I'm your father, or I know better because I've had different experiences than you, or I've read a book you haven't read, or I just see you in out every single day and I know all your blind spots. And if you would just listen to me, your life would be so much better. And with that knowing better comes the critic approach. And what comes with that is this illusion that I have some control. Right. And it's kind of getting rid of the illusion of control and also getting rid of the illusion that I actually know better. That once I am just curious and I'm like, hey, I don't know. Let's talk about it. What, you know, and be really, really curious about what the other person is experiencing, what they've tried, just this overall dropping any degree of better than, more than, smarter than, more experience than, and simply coming at it as an equal is to me the essence. And it can be hard to do because we get emotionally invested in the negative feelings that drive us. And Peter, this morning we were on a podcast and you just spoke so eloquently about that. I would love to pass it on to you for a repeat.
I'll say something, but I don't quite remember ever what I've said, minutes ago.
Well, there's a lot of pressure on you right now, Peter. I just want to feel it.
You know, what I've thought about as I was just listening to you speak is this, we have a four-step process, right? The focus is on shifting from critic to ally, then outcome, opportunity, and plan. And you created a great, Howie, you created a great mnemonic, alley-oop, which is the basketball pass that you pass to someone where it's like a slam dunk for them to get it in. It's like the perfect pass for them to get it in is an alley-oop. An ally oop is the mnemonic. And when I'm listening to us and I'm thinking, the shift, for me, an important piece of the shift from critic to ally is to remind myself, I go to the second step for myself. I don't want to overcomplicate things here, but I go to the second step of myself. Let's say I want to change you, Howie. Right. And you're someone that I love and that I care about. And if I'm frustrated with something or I'm annoyed, it's easier to come, as a critic. And I can find my own positive intent and what I care about. And I can say that anytime I'm angry, it's really because I love or I care. I never get angry at someone unless I care about them. Like it's those two things go hand in hand, or I care about an outcome. In order to make that shift, I realize I do something else. I ask myself the question I'm about to ask them, which is, what is the outcome I want? If I'm upset at my wife for something, if I'm angry at Eleanor or frustrated, and I focus on that and her and the behavior, it's easy to fall into critic. But if I say, what is the outcome I want? Well, the outcome I want is connection, let's say. The outcome I want is to see her successful in what she's doing. Like the outcome that I want in the situation is something always good in relation to her. So if I can connect with the goodness that I want, the outcome that I'm going for, then it's much easier for me to then say, how can I help her get there? So there's a way, even as I say that, that I'm doing a little mini four-step process for myself every time I'm going in to change someone. What's the outcome I want? And given the fact that I want to change them, what is the opportunity in this situation to help them get there? And now I'm going to go back in and do my empathy, confidence, and permission. And then I'm going to ask them about the outcome they want. And I'm going to use the process. But the way I always come back to using this process is I ask myself that question. I'm an ally to myself, and I ask myself, what's the outcome I want? And how can this frustration or anger or situation we're in be an opportunity to help us get to that outcome? And inevitably, the answer ends up with me being an ally of the person.
The thing that comes to my mind immediately is, what about those dirty dishes in the sink? Like, I'm trying to come up with a scenario in which I am assisting them in cleaning the dishes that I want cleaned, that they are perfectly happy to have sitting on the counter unwashed because they're 14 and their parents have always done that for them, hypothetically.
So can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is it really about the dishes?
Well, it's about having a nice place to live. It's about being able to like look at the kitchen and feel good looking at the kitchen and like not having mess everywhere. So,
and why do you want to feel good looking at the kitchen? For the sake of what? What does it do for you?
It helps me be more centered.
Okay. So
so of course I fly off the handle in order to get more centered. That makes perfect sense.
And we're done. But anyway, so
well,
that's So my point, so that was just like a little mini process, right? But my point is, you know, you go back and you go, what's the outcome I want? You know, like, okay, so I want to be centered. Great. So how could this be an opportunity to get there? And now you're off and I'm not saying there's not still a problem of dirty sink, you know, dirty plates in the sink, but you know, you got there yourself.
Damn you, coaches. taking me out of my comfort zone and forcing me to realize I'm acting against my own interests. So on that happy note, everyone watching, you too have the opportunity to be taken out of your comfort zone and forced to act in your own best interest. Peter and Howie, how good to, tell me, where can we find you? Where can we find your book? How can people who want to get a hold of you and learn more do that?
Best way is to go to BregmanPartners.com, BregmanPartners.com. And you can see the book. It's like right on the cover page, and there's a lot of free resources there. It's the best place to go.
Awesome. And Howie, you're at Bregman Partners too?
Yep. We're working together on a lot of, you know, a lot of business stuff. We're writing together and doing these podcasts. Honestly, like, writing the book didn't help me be this kind of person half as much as doing like 5 podcasts a week. Like, every day I talk about it and then I come home and I remember who to be. So I appreciate this opportunity, Stever.
Absolutely. Just make sure to tell people far and wide that appearing on a live stream with me improves their lives immensely. thank you very much, gentlemen. And all of you watching, thank you as well.
Thank you so much, Stever. A lot of fun.
You've been listening to the Business Explained podcast by Stever Robbins at www.steverrobbins.com. If you have any questions you'd like me to answer in a future podcast, just email them to podcast@steverrobbins.com. You can also visit the website, www.steverrobbins.com, and send email by clicking on the contact link. Thank you very much for listening.